And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 806. We're keeping our team-by-team previews for the 2026 baseball season upon us. And we're going to talk Minnesota Twins here. In order to help me break down the Twins, we have it's been a while since we had this individual on the show, so good to have him back. You can find him on Access Twins, Twins TV, he writes the Sports Radar, and much, much more. Brandon Warren, how we doing, man?
We're doing pretty good. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. How's the offseason treating you in Twins land?
Honestly, not too bad. It's been pretty cold. Got quite a bit of snow, but I know that we're somewhere under 40 days until pitchers and catchers report. So it's going to warm up at some point, and I got to keep the faith that that's going to happen. But for now, we're doing pretty good over here.
Good, good. Before we get started on this, I kind of mentioned where they can find you. Let the folks know. I know your Access Twins is a Substack and whatnot. Where they can find you, all the good stuff.
Yeah, I'll be launching a new podcast called the Brandon Warren Baseball Show here any day now. Got our first guest lined up. John Becker and I are gonna break down where we think the remaining free agents will land, and so that should be a good place to start. But look me up anywhere for Brandon Warren and you'll find me writing, talking, gabbing, all that fun stuff.
Good, good, good. All right, before we get to the players on this Minnesota Twins team, first off, what were your thoughts on how 2025 ended up with the Twins?
I mean, pretty, if we can be frank, based on what was expected, it traded 40% of the roster at line. But I also think that if you look objectively at the fact that they traded relievers and guys that are on expiring contracts, it was as drastic a flip as, with that said, I have some holes to still fill. Again, we're not on the eve of it, but got some work to do still. And last year was certainly very, very frustrating. I thought the team was built to play much better than it did. And here we are talking about a team that is, I believe, drafting third overall this year. So things went sideways somewhere along the way.
Yes, most definitely. But hey, they got some options here. They got some players. They might make some more trades. It's going to be an interesting run here. But let's start with the hitters in this neck of the woods. We got Byron Buxton. It's one thing, you've obviously lived it in Minnesota. It's been one of the top prospects back in the day. It's, can Byron Buxton ever stay healthy for a full season? Well, we saw 126 games, which is the most since 2017. We saw 35 homers and 24 steals. A great run for Buxton. What's kind of the chatter around there? He's a guy that said he wants to basically retire a Twin, so that's always a plus. But what's the chatter on health, like expectations for Buxton? Can, like, as us in like this fantasy world, it's like, can we believe another year like this is possible?
I mean, it's difficult. And the other thing too is that Rocco Baldelli was big on giving guys, days off or DH or that kind of thing. And we don't know what Derek Shelton's going to be like quite, but he does come from the Rocco Baldelli tree. He was their bench coach a few years back before he was hired by the Pirates. So my gut would say that it's going to be a similar approach with Buck, where as long as he's feeling good enough to go, he'll go. And I think if you can expect 125 games and that the days off are more along the lines of rest as opposed to injuries, that's the kind of thing you can navigate as a fantasy player much better than, you wake up in the morning and or you see the lineup come out at 2 p.m. and that he's not in it. That gives you enough time to usually find someone else to replace. You would probably have to draft another guy you really like as kind of a quasi starter as his running mate. But as far as guys with 35 home or 25 steal potential, there's just not that many out there. And yep, the price that you would pay for them versus what you'll pay for Buxton, I think would probably be, it would be a little bit cheaper for Buck. And so, you take what you get from him plus whoever your running mate is for him, you're probably going to be in a pretty good spot. So again, I know there's risk. There's always risk, and it's doubly so with Buxton, but I feel good about him going into next season. He's going to be, I think it's his age 32 season. You know, I'm not quite worried about age yet, but his game is predicated enough on speed that, you know, it does creep into the back of your mind about what happens when he's, you know, maybe shifts to right field and stops running the bases like he did. Where does his value go? But for this year, I'm still pretty high on Buxton.
Yeah, I like that. No, it's a good point. Like, preface it, he's pick 84, is not going super expensive. Like, guys that can give you 35, 25 and just kind of have it planned. He's not playing a full season, folks. We're pretty aware of that. But as long as he's still out there, and if Schelt can figure it out, that's big. Let's flip to the younger side of things. A guy that'll be 23 this year. That's Luke Kuechel, who he really got to have his kind of coming out party while healthy in two different stints last year. 14 steals over 49 games, hit 302. So we've seen great plate discipline. But the question with him, I guess, is there power there, or is it more of a speed and batting average asset? How do the Twins plan on utilizing him? What can we expect from him this year?
Yeah, it's tricky because, you know, he's, I think, by definition, mostly a second baseman, but he's played the outfield. They did slash do still have a hole at first base, no matter how you feel about Cody Clemens, Eric Wagaman, and anybody else. But, you know, I can't believe that Kyle Hendricks threw hard enough to break anybody's bone in anybody's forearm either. That was kind of the funny little joke I had last year. You know, you kind of use humor to cope with tragedy, and the Twins 2025 season was a tragedy. That was part of it. With Kuechel, and you'll see too, like with his advanced metrics, there's a big drop off between his weighted on base average and his expected. It's like a 40 point difference. I think as much as that would concern me, so much of it was coming back from Tommy John and then the forearm and then wearing out down the stretch just from playing more games than he kind of had. You know, between the injuries and playing late into the season, you know, there's some kind of duality there. I do get a little concerned, though. I mean, the 323 expected weighted on base average against the 363 total does mean that there's some regression there. But the way he finished, you know, it made me feel a little better, like, okay, closer you get to the finish line, the more tired you are. That's a little more of an understandable downturn than opposed to just, you know, middle of the year, you hit, you know, 180 for a month. And then suddenly you're like, well, where do we go from here? With Kuechel, I do think there's some power in there, but I think, you know, he's going to be much more attractive in leagues that value slugging percentage, you know, from doubles and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so obviously I'm high on him from a player standpoint because I've seen him come up and I see how hard he plays. The one thing that you'll never be able to fault him for is playing hard or not playing hard. I like the walk rate, almost 10%. So again, too, if you're in a league that gives you on base percentage, that's a nice little boost there, but it's definitely going to be, a bit of contrast. You know, if your league is home runs and stolen bases and you expect him to play a full season, again, it's the Byron Buxton thing, you know, you're going to have to kind of make some concessions there that he'll probably give you steals if he's healthy. And then the home runs are kind of up in the air, but as I've kind of seen, you know, assessing the landscape, second base is really tricky this year. So he's a guy where, I mean, if you're choosing between him and Jackson Holliday, and I've seen Jackson Holliday, you know, kind of ramping up there too. I don't know how I would choose one or the other. I know Holliday's got the pedigree, but Kuechel's got the results. You know, how do you decide on something like that? I guess I'd like to know what your thought. Yeah.
I think it's one of those. I think I lean Holliday if I want the power aspect. If I want more consistent speed and average, it's Kuechel. Yeah. So it's kind of a catch 22 on based that on one.
Build and yep. Draft flow and that sort of thing. Yeah. I when I do the what's it called? It's the with the SiriusXM guys, and it's a league where we draft and we do it. And then talk on the radio with the guys on SiriusXM. There'll be a lot of like watching the draft board and how it lays out, mm-hmm. and kind of adapting to that. And so obviously you're not taking Kuechel or Holliday all that high, but probably higher than you'd like based on the positional issues and stuff. But that's what I like to do, is kind of get a feel for the room early on and then kind of tailor my approach to that. But those would be two guys that I think, yeah, based on what you're looking for, you know, that's what you're going to want is speed from Kuechel And I mean, he hit, what was it, 302? I mean, guys don't hit 300 anymore. No. If you got 280 from a guy like him, you know, extrapolated out over 120 games, that's huge. Like, that is huge.
Yep. That's one reason why I do like him, is that that batting average and that speed goes a long, long ways. But it, it's the question is your build, essentially, is what it comes down to with Luke Kuechel. All right, you're this is tongue-in-cheek, apologize, but your biggest free agent splash this offseason has been Josh Bell, who I always have a soft spot for, just because he's always basically free in fantasy drafts, but and he's going to hit you around 20 homers, hopefully hits you 240-plus in that range. But now he looks like he's going to be your potentially starting first baseman. What are your thoughts on Josh Bell as a playing time-wise and whatnot for the Twins?
Yeah, it's hard to say because first base slash DH, there's been some chatter about him DHing, which I don't necessarily love. You know, from a first base standpoint, if you don't, you know, if you've got not great vision like I, you could maybe say, oh, yeah, he kind of do a little Carlos Santana impersonation. He won't strike out a ton. He'll take his walks. He's not going to be a factor on the bases. Quite frankly, I think he's one of the slowest runners in baseball.
Yep.
But from a DH standpoint, it's like, you know, I don't know that I want a 105 weighted runs created plus guy as my DH. I'd rather just mix and match with whoever's not playing in the field that day. So I think what they'll probably end up doing is putting him at first base on the long side of a platoon with Wagamin. You know, they just traded a decent relief prospect to the Marlins for him. And I think Cody Clemens will be a factor, but in terms of like from a fantasy standpoint, you know, you don't care if Bell is DHing or playing first base because you're getting the stats either way. So I'm trying not to let that cloud my personal feeling that I don't think Bell would be a great DH. With that said, I don't know. I mean, I guess if you take defense out of the equation and he only focuses on hitting, you know, he's a big, strong, hulking. I mean, the dude's a physical specimen. He looks like a freaking defensive end, well, maybe more of a linebacker, but like scary big dude that if he hits like he looks as a DH, I mean, you know, and this is all me as also having a soft spot for a guy in his 30s. You know, it's at some point a guy just is who he is. So it does, though, come back to, yeah, that's kind of how the Twins offseason has been, is a lot of low wattage moves. We'll talk more about those, too, as far as on the pitching side. But as far as Bell, I think he's going to be a regular. I think he's going to play a lot, and his defense will dictate where he ends up, whether it's DH or first. I said online, I said for a defensive first baseman, he's a pretty good hitter, and I kind of like trying to stay away from his defense. But a year ago, the Twins signed Ty France, whose defensive metrics weren't particularly great, and I'm trying to remember who won the Gold Glove this year at first.
Yeah, exactly.
France. I'm not saying the Twins are going to be some sort of magic workers. They've got back-to-back Gold Glove winners at first base. I don't think this is going to be year three of that, but stranger things have happened. With that said, yeah, I think Bell's going to play a lot. And as long as he's anywhere near who he's been the last few years, you know, slightly above league average, we've already seen the Twins don't need that much more from first base to be okay with it. I mean, Ty France played a lot and he was not very exciting with the bat last year.
Yeah, no, I like Bell just because his price is 338. Like, I'll take that all day long. And it's funny, good. Like, when he opened up that Carlos Santana line, I made that comp like on a show a couple of weeks ago. Whenever they signed him, well, hey, they got their new Carlos Santana. Here you go.
Yep, exactly.
It fits the mold perfectly. Now, let's talk about a guy that in the fantasy world we've been very excited about for a couple years in Matt Wallner. Now, health has not been his friend, but he's going to be 28, played 104 games. Power's undeniable with this guy. But then, like I said, health, hit 202 last year. A lot of questions involved in Wallner. What are your thoughts on him? Because between just people concerned with platoon, there's health. Where are the Twins at with Matt Wallner?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, so everybody around here loves him. He's Minnesotan, and so we all want to see him do well, too, just from a Minnesota standpoint. We've kind of seen the last 2 years, the Matt Wallner giveth and Matt Wallner taketh. 154 weighted runs created plus in 2024 with a 389 batting average on balls in play. You drop that to a 228. Now, both of those are anomalies based on what we know about how that normalizes. And his career rate is 302. Guy hits the ball hard. A 302 is not that unreasonable. You know, it feels like this is a chance for a rebound. You're not going to get any stolen bases, but he should play every day. You know, the Max Kepler days are far behind us. Harrison Bader's not walking through that door. Trevor Larnach might have 1 foot out the door. And even if they do bring up some of the kids, you know, Gabriel Gonzalez had a great year on the farm last year. Emmanuel Rodriguez had a really nice year when he can stay healthy. You still got that DH spot to fall back on. And so Wallner at DH is, to me, a very attractive proposition. And you look at his career numbers. I mean, he's hit 231, but a 131 weighted runs created plus. He mashes when he's right. The only concern I have, high fastballs have been his kryptonite. And kryptonite from the standpoint of not up out of the zone swing and miss, but in the zone swing and miss. So I need him to show that he can hit 95-plus fastballs, miles-per-hour fastballs, in that 1-2-3 range of the strike zone to where I'm going to feel like he can take that leap to – I mean, the power's obviously there, 35 homers. If you played a full year and you got 35 homers from him, you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. The math all adds up. But, you know, there's been injuries. There's been struggles hitting lefties, which, I mean, you're always going to have those as a left-handed hitter, and that's part of the calculus as well. But we're looking at a guy who hasn't gotten more than 400 plate appearances in a season and has barely played more than 100 games in a season, and that was this year. If you can get any sort of full season out of him where, you know, even if you deal with the ups and downs, you should be able to get a 240, 235, 240 batting average with a ton of home runs. And I think he'll drive in a bunch of runs just because I think that with the way this lineup is going to be constructed, you know, seeing him on a team that's trying again, and I do believe that they're trying in the sense of like, you know, they had no bullpen guys in the second half last year. They just said, look, we're trading all our bullpen guys and we'll see what happens. This is going to be a team where if they're scoring runs, and I think that they will, Wallner's going to drive in a fair share of them. So, you know, if you're looking on the back end, I don't know the ADP for him, but if you're trying to find 35 homers and 100 runs batted in from the most unlikely of sources, this might be your guy.
Yep, pick 323. So very, very cheap. Oh, very,
easy. Very cheap. Yeah. I mean, how far is that from Josh Bell? It sounds like it's pretty close.
Yeah, it is right near Josh Bell, so you are correct. Yeah.
I always wonder why Wallner hasn't played first base to a big, strong guy like that.
Yeah,
good with the money. But there was a good point said last year. I don't know. Do you remember Carson McCusker? Very briefly with the Twins last year.
Name rings a bell, yes.
6'8", big, strong guy. He actually signed overseas. He said something very interesting. He said, because he'd never played first base either, only the outfield, and he said, it's a long way down to field ground balls when you're this tall. And I thought, you know what? Because I'm thinking catching the ball, you could save a lot of errors being a big, tall guy like Matt Wallner or Carson McCusker. But apparently, fielding the ground balls is the tough part when you're that big.
The bending over part.
I mean, I can relate to that too, but I'm not that
tall. I was about to say, I have a gut in the way. There's a difference. all right, let's go to the behind the plate here. Ryan Jeffers 2 seasons ago just jumped out, 21 homers, shocked many of us. Last year kind of reverted back, 9 home runs. I think he's somewhere in the middle there, let's be fair. But 9 home runs, but the batting average jumped back up to 266, where when the power was there, it's almost like he sold out for power. It's weird dynamic there. I don't know what to think of Jeffers. I've always been a fan. He's been the primary catcher the last 2 years, which has been a plus, getting about 120 games, give or take. He gets picked around pick 245 right now. Is he still the primary guy in Minnesota, or is there different plans for Jeffers?
Without a doubt. He's going into a walk year too, which I don't know how much people care about that, but certainly walk year bumps when you're about to hit free agency are not uncommon. His backup is Alex Jackson, who's like a career one-something hitter. You know, he can play defense, and he had a pretty decent year with the Orioles last year. You know, it wasn't like he was a complete zero. So there's definitely a backup plan there, but Christian Vasquez isn't walking through that door. At least I don't think this is going to be not a 1A, 1B like the Twins have had at catcher for a very long time. I mean, you go back to Jason Castro and Mitch Garver were 1A, 1B, vice versa. This is going to be, and I granted Jeffers played 119 games last year, so it wasn't that 1A, 1B because Vasquez didn't hit and then his shoulder basically exploded. You know, it's going to be, though, the Jeffers show back there. And I think over the course of a full season, I mean, you look at his slash. I know slash doesn't matter that much in fantasy, but 266, 356, 397 for a catcher. really hitting good. 266. If you can get a dozen bombs and a stolen base or two from a catcher hitting 265, you can do a lot worse than that behind the plate. You know, in OBP leagues, almost 100 point. It was a 90 point gap between average and OBP. So he's taking his walks. And he's good for, you know, doubles every now and then. I mean, from a catcher standpoint, that's a pretty solid player. It's the kind of guy, if I were the Twins, probably try sign to like a 3-year deal to keep him around. We'll see how soon Eduardo Tait is going to be ready, the guy they got for Duran. But as far as catchers go, I mean, he's not particularly old. He's pretty good behind the plate, not as good as he's been in the past. But there's really no path or roadblocks to him playing 120, 125 games and putting up solid numbers behind the plate. You know, 47 runs, 47 driven in. Not the greatest, but again, I think this offense is going to score some more runs this year. And if I were to guess right now, you know, you maybe slot him in sixth in this lineup, sixth or seventh. So I mean, I think that would probably be a decent spot to drive in and score some runs. I'm bullish on Jeffers this year. I think a lot of it though comes back to he's a free agent to be. He's got a lot to gain because catchers don't hit free agency that often, and when they do, they get paid.
Yep. Yes. No. He's got. If he could put together like a 15 home run season, he'll be looking very, very happy.
He'll get 4 years. He'll get a 4-year deal at $15 million per year if he can do that.
Yep. Yep. Be beautiful. All right. Let's talk about the player that so many fantasy players want to know about. He's going to be 27 this year. The skills are pretty undeniable. The health is also pretty unreliable. We saw 12 steals last year from Royce Lewis. I think that was the biggest surprise. Mm-hmm. He played 106 games. That is also a pretty good surprise. Power deteriorated a bit compared to what we saw in previous years, but again, ran more, hit 237. That's back-to-back seasons with a rough batting average. Yeah. ADP-wise, Royce Lewis is at pick 201, which if we would have talked about this last offseason, would have just laughed at. Where are we at on Royce? Because he's getting 27. Skills are still pretty good. Like honestly, at pick 201, 13 homers and 12 steals isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. And I think we know he's better than that, but I'm speaking for myself. You actually watch this guy religiously and probably know way more about him. So what do you got on Royce Lewis?
So month over month last year, his sprint speed increased, which showed a trust in the health of his hamstrings. The hamstrings have been what have held him back a fair amount. It's almost like the Josh Donaldson calf situation back in the day. So what I see is the potential for 25 bags because, you know, 106 games, 12 bags, and a ramp up of speed to where he felt comfortable to steal. There were times where, like, running to first, he would look slow early on, like he was really throttled down, and then it just went kaboom, like, towards the end of the season. And I think what happened would be also, like, and not unfairly, a lot of people just kind of tuned out the Twins after they punted on the season, you know? And so the things that maybe people didn't see down the stretch, and, you know, I know we'll talk about pitching, but like Simeon Woods Richardson finished really strong.
Yep.
Some of the things that I think people may not have noticed would have been Royce's stolen bases and his speed ramping up. I still think he can hit. He didn't strike out last year, under 20%. It's just, does the batted ball profile actually show potential? Are we gambling on skills and draft pedigree as opposed to actual data? Again, I still believe, and it looks like he can handle third base defensively, so you feel pretty good about, like, playing there defensively every day and you know, having stability at that spot. I think he's still got another gear to get back to. Obviously, we've seen it, you know, in the past. But I don't think he's a guy who's going to have a 283 on base percentage and sub 400 slugging percentage next year. I still believe in the skills and the talent. And I also think, too, this is going to be a completely different team. I don't know if, you know, outside of Byron Buxton, you're looking at guys to take leadership roles on. I think Royce, for better or worse, thinks of himself as that kind of guy. And I think if he can assert himself as a cornerstone, again, all this is non-hard data fantasy type stuff, but it would factor into my decision making, knowing I want a guy who's going to be there every day. I think you can draft Lewis late, you know, as your corner infield option or something like that, where, I mean, you're choosing between him and someone else comparable every single day and have a good chance that pick hits or your other one. So, you know, I'm in on Lewis this year. Don't want to sound like I'm in on everybody as a Twins guy, but Lewis is a guy who, like, when you have Buxton, Correa, and Lewis like the Twins did last year, you're thinking, if I can get all three of those guys healthy, nobody should be able to touch us in the Central. And frankly, I stand by that because, you know, you look at the Tigers. The Tigers have some really good players, and they have a lot of role players who know what their roles are. Outside of Riley Green, who's amazing, you know, you've got Kerry Carpenter, who I wouldn't call a superstar, but a nice player. You know, outside of Jose Ramirez, you've got some nice players. Stephen Kwan's not a superstar, but he's really good. Like, there's nobody in the AL Central the Twins needed to fear last year than them, more than themselves. And they basically self-destructed. And I believe Lewis can be a part of another core with Buxton and whoever else, whether it's Kieschel or any of the younger guys I said coming up, to make this a respectable team this year. So I'm in on Lewis for that reason. I think he's going to be a very key tenet of what I hope is at least a league average offense, because they should be able to pitch, especially on the starting side.
Hey, it's okay. I appreciate you being in on everybody because, A, they're all very affordable compared to other teams.
I'm going to be out on your next guy. So just so you know, I know who you have coming up, but I'm out on him.
That's good. But I also want to just say is there's a reason when I do this show, I have someone that like knows the team. So you should be hopefully we're in January. I hope people are still excited about their team before we get going. Yeah, there's always still hope at this point.
I understand being out in May or June, but if you're out in January, brother.
Exactly. Out of all 30 teams, there's like one or two where it's like the White Sox recently and the Angels have been pretty tough shows. But
talking up the White Sox rotation, and I was like, you know, it's better, but I'm still not talking about Shane Smith starting a playoff game for me game one. You know, I love the optimism and I love the fact that they went out and spent some money. And I think the White Sox are on the right track. I think they're doing all the right things. But I'm also not penciling them in for 84, 85 wins this year either. If they do, it's because the rest of the division is they're all kind of in the same ether.
Yep, agreed. All right, let's talk about this next guy. You made a comment earlier. He might have 1 foot out already. Trevor Larnach hit 17 home runs last year, hit 250. So back-to-back seasons of 15 or more homers hitting over 250. That's a plus, but there's always – he played 142 games, which was a surprise as well. Problem is with Trevor Larnach, his ADP is only 394, almost 400, but playing time is a question. He's been rumored in trades. There's a lot going on there. What are your thoughts on Larnach? Cause you said you are out on him.
I mean, I thought they'd non-tender him just based on their budgetary self-imposed constraints. He's going to make about $5 million. I mean, obviously I liked him coming out, you know, he went in the first round, big time hitter, lots of opposite field power at Oregon State. But that profile is so hard to hit on. It's corner outfield. It's left-handed, and you got to basically be a power hitter if you're not a great fielder. Otherwise, you get kind of shoehorned into the DH platoon left field. You know, I always call it the Cole Calhoun role. You know, there's guys like that around all the time that are free agents that get signed at the end of right before spring training, and they have a nice year. They get a multi-year deal, and it just kind of disappear. Like David Peralta was kind of my high-end comp for a guy like that. And Peralta could field, you know, he could move. Larnach's not that kind of guy. It's like Jason Kubel from the Twins a few years ago. He's like, if you mash, you've got a spot, but as soon as the bat slips, it's really hard to justify paying you much. You know, we're going in an age where corner outfielders are more athletic. They're former center fielders who move off the position, but could go there again. You know, so with Larnach, I feel like he's kind of, you know, it's not like the rim protecting big man from 15 years ago in basketball fading out of the game, you know, like a Roy Hibbert, but it's still that profile is just not that exciting. If you pick the right corner outfielder at the right time, you know, your last pick and you take him, it's possibly pops off for 25 homers and a 280 average. It's not impossible, but how do you find the right guy? And how do you know how long to give him in the season to get his wheels turning? Because, you know, there's that bunch of turnover at the beginning of the year on waivers and that sort of thing, where you've got to kind of identify your pop-up guys and who's going to take off. For me, Larnach is never going to hit lefties enough to be a factor every day. He had a whole bunch more experience against them this last year, and that's why his overall numbers kind of tailed off, because he still wasn't particularly good, better than before, but still not good. to the point where his right versus right-handed numbers get kind of obscured. They don't suffer because they're separate, but you know, you don't appreciate the good when you have as much bad as the Twins did too. And he mixed and matched a lot between left field and DH. I'm not sure what the plan is there. They still have James Outman. They still have all those rookies I talked about. But you know, if Larnach is playing in left field against righties every time out, you can do worse on pick 400. I mean, like you said, basically free. If that was his role and he got 400 plate appearances, you might be looking at 22, 25 home runs on a really, really good, like 90th percentile season. He's at that prime where he's got to be coming up on his best seasons or else he's just a total washout. I'm not looking to push aside young, exciting guys like Emmanuel Rodriguez, Gabriel Gonzalez, Walker Jenkins. I haven't mentioned him yet. I mean, they've got a full outfield of guys who are interesting in addition to Wallner and Buxton. So where Larnach goes, hard to say, but who's trading for a guy like that too? They've tendered him. They've agreed to pay him roughly $5 million. I don't know, you know, watching where free agents are landing and for how much. I'm just not sure what the value is in flipping him when you could have just non-tendered him.
Yeah, he's affordable at the same time. Yeah, what's going on? And they have so many options. It feels like if he gets dealt, it's in like a combo package for one of the starting pitchers that it's getting rumored everywhere. That's where it feels like it goes.
An interesting reliever because the Twins bullpen is a total wild card right now.
Yeah, it'll be one of those kind of off the wall, out of nowhere, Tuesday morning trades or something where you're like, okay, that checks out.
For a Royals reliever you haven't heard of yet that throws 98.
Exactly. All right, let's talk Brooks Lee. This is a guy that throughout the minors, extremely good batting average, a little bit of pop here and there throughout my 16 home runs last year, kind of surprised some, maybe. Not a ton of speed, though, but a guy that can play all over the diamond, still super young, 25 years old. He's eligible at second, short, and third in your fantasy leagues, which is big. Mm-hmm. Goes round pick 315. Again, most of these Twins, very affordable. Like, they fill out rosters depending on how you're building. But
even when the Twins are good, they don't have studs. It's a bunch of decent players.
That's like the AL Central in a nutshell.
Yep, exactly. It really is, though. I mean, you're not going to draft four Twins. You might draft four Yankees, four Red Sox, four Rays. I mean, I don't know about the Rays, but you're not drafting four Twins unless you are absolutely doing like some kind of off the wall, do the opposite thing.
Yep, pretty much. So where are you at on Brooks Lee? Like, what's kind of the role looking like for Lee this year? As like I said, he could play everywhere.
Sure seems like he's going to be their starting shortstop. And, you know, they just brought in Orlando Arcia on a minor league deal. I think that's their utility infielder. As far as shortstops on the farm, you know, they spent their first round pick on a short. I mean, big deal. Everybody drafts a shortstop in the first round. But there's not a lot of imminent shortstop help. So I think it's like, hey, kid, this is your job. Carlos Correa, bye-bye. They DFA'd Ryan Fitzgerald to make room for Wegerman. So that was their backup shortstop. So all things considered. Oh, they got Kreidler, too, from the Tigers, who's kind of a utility kind of type, too, but not much of a factor. So I think it's going to be Brooks Lee at short and a lot of it. You know, he was third on the team in plate appearances last year, second in games played with 139. You don't love the triple slash, but doesn't strike out. I think walks will come. I trust the approach to where walks will be there. It just becomes, you know, does he make enough good contact? He doesn't miss, but is there enough good contact? And I think there is. I think based on where they drafted him and what they expected him to do and like how some guys just come along a little slower, you know, he was pushed pretty quickly from Cal Poly to the big leagues. When he first came up, he was incredible and then has been just a huge dip. I think that next level, like this is not to me a guy that you have to be like abandon all hope. Because the numbers he has now look like a shortstop from 1993. Like, he looks like...
He's Omar Vizquel.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll let the comparisons stop on the field, let's hope. But, no, offensively, yeah, 16 homers, but no, you know, he looks like Alex Gonzalez from back in the day, except Alex Gonzalez could play shortstop. I think there's something here to where if he's your last pick, last couple picks, 16 homers from a shortstop, you start thinking, what else can he do for me? I think the batting average should be there. I don't think he's going to walk a ton. But batting average and homers from a shortstop, you could do a lot worse.
Yep, totally agree. I love Brooks Lee, and the flexibility goes a long, long way. Let's talk about Austin Martin here, who zero power, basically.
None.
He's got some speed, hits for average. I don't know how he plays every day, but he still does. What are your thoughts on Austin Martin?
Well, he played every day when they were needing left field help and didn't want to put Trevor Larnach out there. He looked pretty good in left field. I don't know if his days on the dirt are done, but he's not playing short or third. He's not playing first. I mean, second base, you're pretty well set with Kiesel, and the outfield's pretty solid. But I think Derek Shelton, like his predecessor, is going to mix and match a lot. And they don't have a great top of the order, you know, get on base guy. Byron Buxton batted leadoff for the bulk of the season. He's starts you off with a homer, but he's not walking outside of respect walks. He swings at a lot of stuff, and teams might pitch around him because behind him is, you know, some banjo hitting shortstop. So, with Martin, if you get him in there every day, you know, 12.2% walk rate, doesn't strike out. Even if he pokes a couple doubles, you're looking at a pretty useful player, both in real life and in fantasy. You know, he stole 11 bases. I mean, even me seeing that now as I'm looking at the screen, 11 bases in 50 games. I mean, you can kind of dream on that if he plays regularly. And the Twins aren't so set in left field that he couldn't play there more often than not. So, again, seems like we're banging the drum, you know, the CD skipping, but late in the draft, you can do a lot worse for stolen bases and batting average. You know, if you start looking at specialist players and you want stolen bases, but you don't want to completely crater your average, because you'll get the guy that hits 216 and steals 50 bases. Well, does that kill your average? Does it, you know, you can kind of play both sides with Martin late in a draft and feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. Pick 475 goes a long, long ways that one.
Easy.
When I look at the rest of the active roster for now, you mentioned Wagaman. We got our boy that we loved to stream, Cody Clemens, Edward Julian. Anybody worth anything fantasy-wise there, or is it more set that prospects will hopefully take over there at some point in time?
No, it's pretty much platoon stuff. Yeah. I'm kind of out on Julian. He was so good. Yep. So good when he came up. And if he makes it through the offseason, I'd be willing to see him again. But he's got this weird thing where he locks up on breaking balls with two strikes, and it's almost like he quiet quits or like his controller disconnects. It's the weirdest thing. And he was so good. So good. Like, you know, Danny Santana had that crazy good rookie year and then just completely fell apart. I don't think this is like that, because it felt a little more sustainable with the walks and the power, but I don't know, man. You know, I think like Jose Miranda, if he goes somewhere else, you might be looking at a guy that has a nice little bounce back. But I don't know where these guys fit on winning baseball teams either.
Man, Jose Miranda, that's a blast from the past that we were all so excited about at one point in time.
Oh, man, he could really swing it when he was right. And now, you know, he was minor league deal to the Padres. I mean, how the mighty have fallen.
Mighty have fallen, the Padres and Miranda. Let's go to the pitching side of things here, and this is where I love the rotation. I think a lot of people should love this rotation. It is, to your point about the bullpen earlier, I think it has put some consistency behind these guys. You'll be in a lot of ball games. Let's start with Pablo Lopez, who a couple years back had the shoulder injury, then looked great for a couple years. Injury last year, finished with a forearm strain, I believe it was. I know it was a minor. They're saying minor, so we got to be optimistic there. Where are we at on Pablo, though? ADP is 140. I like Pablo a lot, but finishing hurt is not always the greatest thing for me.
Yeah, you have your most recent tape is your most important tape, and when it's the tape on your arm as opposed to the tape of you pitching, that's problematic. So, yeah, I mean, I like him from the standpoint of I was banging the drum for the Twins to trade for him a year before they did, and he gives them something they haven't had in a long time, which is a bona fide game one starter. You know, you could say, oh, he's not an ace. The aces are weird nowadays because we don't have the Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer types anymore. Everybody's, kind of all over the map. You know, if you look at the top 30 pitchers in a given year, there's a lot of guys that are not household names. Pablo, for me, when he went down, the season ended, and it was in Sacramento in, I think it was early June when he had the lat. And lats, they're tough, man. I mean, they've ended or really messed up some seasons. He battled his butt off and came back for a team that was way out of contention and, you know, obviously couldn't finish the season off. But he was the linchpin for wherever they were headed last year. And when he went down on that lousy Sacramento mound, remember how many guys hated it so much? Domingo, I always get these two confused. Severino talked about how much he hated it. And it's like, well, dude, you just signed a long-term deal.
Yeah, you signed the deal, buddy.
That was the beginning of the end. And so how much of the risk of any sort of recurrence of the lat or the forearm is baked into pick 140? Like, what starting pitcher is that? Probably in the 30s?
Give or take. I can pull it up for you right now.
I mean, if you're taking him or Joe Ryan, I'm taking Ryan. Ryan had the same injury, but it was a year earlier, or a similar injury in Chicago around the 4th of July. Around the trade deadline. I'm taking Joe Ryan over Pablo just by sheer fact of a little more stability. But at the end of the day, I mean, you've got two guys who are both could easily be top 30 pitchers, strikeouts, don't walk too many guys, usually can keep the ball in the yard. That's where Joe Ryan struggles. But his biggest issues with keeping it in the yard was when he was dealing with a groin strain. Either way, I'm taking Ryan over Pablo just due to I think there's a little more volume there. But it's an interesting back and forth because they're both very, very good. And they're the biggest reasons why, in addition to Byron Buxton saying he wanted to stay in Minnesota, anytime you've got two starters of this caliber, you're already almost halfway to a very good rotation. There's really no reason to break it up just to save a couple bucks.
Agreed. Yeah, Pablo's about the 34th, 35th starting pitcher off the board. Where Joe Ryan is, I'm with you. I have him over Pablo as well. He's ADP 63, so he's coming off. He's a top like 15.
Okay, so he's way up there. Okay,
people are pretty high on Joe Ryan after the 171 innings last year, strikeout ups. Like you mentioned, it's the home runs with Ryan, but you mentioned also groin injury had a lot to do with that. So
yeah. Well, I would have thought they'd be closer just based on how I see them around here. You know, for the longest time, Kirilloff and Larnach were viewed as the same type of prospect, your Mauers and your Murnaus. Not that they're that level, but like sometimes you get guys that are inextricably linked based on proximity or skill set. You get a lot of Ryan and Lopez and who you like better. I'm not surprised that Ryan is higher, but to what extent? And I also wonder, too, like if that could have been, you know, bumped by so many people so sure he was going to be traded, whether it was to the Red Sox or whoever else. Thinking he gets a nice boost from whether it's a different offense or a different team.
True.
You know, the Twins have kind of shut down that rumor mill for the most part here in the last few weeks.
Yep. I like them both a lot, by the way. I've been drafting plenty of them. Yep. Now the pitcher that I had the privilege of breaking down in Arizona at a conference, and I didn't like what I saw, but I guess there's room for some optimism at the same time. If you want to try to be glass half full, that's Bailey Ober. It's the guy that there was – always or seem like high expectations for strikeouts are there. Ratios are good. Last year, strikeouts disappeared. Ratios through the roof. He's always been at a home run issue because of his fly balls. It took to a whole new level. And it's mainly because his fastball stinks right now. That's the easiest way I can pinpoint it. What are you hearing around there? Because obviously that could be a tweak. It could fix things or maybe there's an underlying injury. There's a lot of factors there. I know he dealt with a little bit of an injury last year. He's getting close to ADP 300 right now, so it's cheap, real cheap if you're buying the bounce back. But should we buy the bounce back is the question.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a lot of reason to buy the bounce back. As a big league team, when you look at a guy like this, you're not really motivated to trade him because it's you know, value's low. Peripheral number's a little better than the raw, but like the velo was down. He struggled to hit 90 some games. That was a big talking point around here. You know, the strikeouts dipping more than two strikeouts per nine, very few guys can stomach that much of a drop, much less guys who throw 90 and are 7 feet tall almost. So it's a high fastballs. Like you said, the fly ball rate, his home run to fly ball rate, while it jumped, it's still in the ballpark of his career rate, 11.9 for his career rate, 12.6 last year. Now, you know, his rookie year bumps that up a little bit, but he's pretty close to in the ballpark. Like, if he's going to give up fly balls, they're going to leave the yard. The Twins do like fly ball guys from the standpoint of Byron Buxton going and getting the ball. You know, I've always been more of a ground ball guy, but if you got guys that can go get it and a ballpark big enough to mitigate that, man, you can go either way. But the strikeout walk combination, you know, that gap is solid for Ober. So there is reason to believe that, like, you know, through regression in the positive sense, and, you know, maybe an off season of rest gets that velo back up in that 91-92 area. If you believe in that, you've probably got a number three starter. And on fantasy teams, that's probably what, like a fifth starter, sixth starter?
Yeah, fifth or like, sixth, yeah.
Yeah, five, six, seven. You know, I think that's probably about the right area. But I see more real life value from a number five starter where, you know, you know what you're getting. You've got 600 big league innings. So it's not like he's going to get on the mound and panic. You know, you worry about throwing guys to the wolves, the Mick Abels and the other guys. This is a guy where what you see is what you get. He's going to be in his age 30 season. So the profile isn't sexy. It's not that exciting. But if you're looking for stable with a chance, like cloudy with a chance of meatballs, if you're looking for stable with a chance of, you know, some strikeouts, you know, it's not like going with Michael Lorenzen where you're going to just like plateau at seven strikeouts per nine, maybe get eight. Ober has struck out more than a batter per inning 2 years running before this. So there is some room there with similar stuff for strikeouts. With that said, if it's a, you know, if it's a throwaway pick, some guy you might be willing to dump within a month or less. Yeah, I think Ober makes sense there. But I don't know that like the underlying metrics say buy low and you're going to win big. This is going to be more shoring up your back end and not starting someone who ruins your rates regularly for a week if you're doing weekly or that sort of thing. It's going to be touch and go until he has maybe four or five solid starts where the velocity is 91, 90, 91, 92 as opposed to 88, 89. So there's layers to it, but he could be decent. I'm not letting myself get too optimistic about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I used to be a big Ober guy. What I saw last year, I'm like, yeah, we can play that game somewhere else. The guy I am optimistic on, you hinted at him earlier, is one Simeon Woods Richardson is going to pick 355 right now, which has gotten me all kinds of excited. Yep. Because you mentioned that finish this season, and on my other show, Bubba in the Bloom, my co-host, he has this pitch mix change thing that he created that shows stuff. All of a sudden, as the season went on, we saw a splitter develop in one pitching profile, and the results followed.
We got lots of airtime on that whole situation. And he came back in late August. And I'm trying to remember when the split started. But like after he came back, he'd been gone for about a month. Just looked like a different guy. You know, 11 strikeouts against the Yankees. The Yankees, say what you will about them not being as good as maybe the Yankee fans hoped they were. But 11 strikeouts in a win over them, shut down the Phillies down the stretch, had a nice game against Cleveland, beat the Angels. Who cares about the Angels? But like, if you look at his September, five starts spanning 27 innings, 36 strikeouts, nine walks, seven earned runs. So 2.33 ERA, 2.54 FIP, and well over a strikeout per inning. I mean, it was a totally different guy. And you have to keep in mind, too, like he was kind of like just an ordinary starter for them in 2024, like ready-made fifth starter, might get you six strikeouts one game, might get you two the next. Like none of the rates were all that exciting. He just turned 25 in September. Like he is getting valuable experience in the major leagues at an age when a lot of guys are still working through some stuff. And he was respectable. He was league average as a 23-year-old starter the year before last. And then this last year, he took another step in the month of September. I think that the days ahead for SWR should be pretty bright, and it might be him pushing aside Ober for that third spot in the rotation and moving Ober into, you know, that 4-5 area is going to be tricky because they've got some young, very exciting pitchers that do not have for sure spots. I mean, if you're looking at a guy like, again, I'll bring up Mick Abel. If he doesn't make the rotation, do you put him in the bullpen because you don't have that many relievers that are, you know, jockeying for position right now? And then how good does your bullpen get if the guys who fall out of your rotation go there and it's, you know, Bradley, Taj Bradley and Zebby Matthews? They've got enough of these young starter types that if they go to the bullpen and add a tick of velocity, suddenly you're looking at a guy who's blowing the barn doors off. So this competition for the rotation and how it trickles down to the bullpen, to me, is going to be extremely fascinating. And Simeon Woods Richardson plays a big role in that.
Yeah, I love SWR, but it brings me, you kind of led into this last point. Like, Zebby Matthews shown some real signs of improvements as the season went along. Shocker, young pitcher, slowly figures things out at the big league level. Like, you deal with it a lot. I watched him. I was like, slow down, folks. He's still super young. Mm-hmm. But the pedigree was there, so optimism. Okay. Taj Bradley, I loved him. He definitely hit a wall in Tampa. Things mm-hmm. got wonky. Gets traded. We'll see if things can change there. So there are moving parts. You mentioned Mick Abel. There's a lot going on. David Festo, let's not forget about him. He's still at one point an option in this thing. So there's a lot of names in here. How do you, like, obviously it's January 5th, a lot can change. How would you kind of see this playing out if you were entering a draft room right now?
I think the five you listed in our show sheet are the five I'd watch for the opening day rotation. You've got Zebby in there, or I've got Zebby in there. You've got Zebby on there. Zebby is the hardest throwing pitcher, starting pitcher in Twins history, as far as we know. You know, we've got StatCast and pitch effects and all that back to, I think, 2009. And before that, the Twins did not employ anybody that threw that hard. So from a velocity, stuff, strikeouts, walks standpoint, I'm all about Zebby. Again, it comes down to home runs. It was the same thing with Louis Varland. I think, though, the total package with Zebby is much better than it was with Louis Varland. Yep. Big Louis Varland fan, Minnesota kid again. But I think with Zebby, you know, there's so much to dream on here. He throws the crap out of the ball. And, I mean, he'll have games where he's just dominant, can't touch him. And then games where, you know, he looks like he's a triple-A starter. And, again, as time goes on, I think he will be – he may leapfrog Woods Richardson for the number three spot. It's going to be good for competition's sake. I think those are the five guys, though, that I would watch for this rotation. I really like Festa, but I think based on some of the arm issues he's had, he's looking more like a short-term, you know, high leverage short-inning reliever. With Bradley, again, I think he belongs in that mix. I'm not sure what his options situation is either, because that's going to play a factor, and he's got to be getting close to out of options. But he also has more experience than some of the other guys. So again, like, it's so hard to kind of, you know, make a puzzle of who makes sense where and who doesn't make sense where without accounting for all those sorts of things. I think Taj might be the first guy on the way out, you know, where he could be in the bullpen as kind of like a Jesse Chavez, two innings here, fireman role. Say you got four innings from your starter and you need somebody to take two and a third to get it to someone else. And those guys have a lot of value too. But I think the five you have are the ones that I would look to start the season. And then from there, there's still plenty of depth. And I mean, bullpens are tricky. You know, you don't, for fantasy purposes, you don't need a seventh inning guy that gets a bunch of strikeouts, but not, you know, unless you're in a holds league, it's not that exciting. But guys that fall out of the bullpen, or the start rotation that could be a factor from the bullpen too. You know, you'd be looking at like Festa as a closer, maybe, you know, they don't have a set closer, but I'm excited about the starting staff and then how that shakes out to the bullpen and what else they add to the bullpen. Cause so far all they've added is like Grant Hartwig on a minor league deal, which, you know, he's pitched in the major leagues, but he's not that exciting. You know, pitching is up in the air, but I think if the rotation gets settled, the bullpen should be so much better for it.
Yeah, Taj has one option left, if that helps at all. But let's talk about that bullpen, because obviously they traded Johan Duran last trade deadline, and rightfully, like, hey, get your pieces for him. He's succeeding in Philly. But you have Justin Topa, Cody Funderburk, Cole Sands. Those guys have been rumored and got their chances at times last year. Topa kind of got the most of the chances, but still just kind of a mess all around, as you mentioned. Heck, Taj Bradley could fit in there if they really figured him out. Lots of options. How do you foresee this playing out? Or is it completely like, hey, we're going to hit spring and see how the chips settle, basically?
Yeah, and I forgot Eric Orr's, who they got from Tampa a couple months ago, too, who's, I mean, again, not overwhelmingly exciting, but, you know, a guy like that adds a strikeout per nine, and suddenly he goes from a sixth inning guy to an eighth inning guy. It just, that's how these things work. You know, I'm looking at Roster Resource, and they have a three-headed closer trio of Topa, Funderburk, and Sands. My personal thought is if they go for ceiling, they go with Sands, who's got better raw stuff, better, I think, like, looks better from the standpoint of, like, you look at his stuff and that looks like a closer. Topa's got a little more track record of working those innings, although he's been injured, doesn't have as many strikeouts at his peak, at least not in the last couple years. And then Funderburk was just exceptional after the deadline. Big lefty, big flowing hair, throws just arms and legs at you. I don't know that I can see him as a closer. I don't know if his stuff is that high-end, high-octane stuff you want late. But the Twins made it work with a lefty with low-octane stuff back in the days of Eddie Gordado. Granted, it's not 2003 anymore. But those are the three guys that are in the conversation right now. I think I would take Sands of those three. But again, this is, you know, if you're in a 12-teamer, that's your third or fourth closer. If you're really, really muscling up, or, you know, the number one guy you're watching on waivers, there's nobody that's going to be that exciting. From a sleeper standpoint, Festa, and then Connor Prelip, who is a starting pitching prospect and has been just absolutely phenomenal when he's been healthy enough. Big arm from the left side, crazy stuff, but again, has not stayed healthy. You know, sleepers, I think Pearson Ohl looks interesting. He was working on a knuckleball as like his fourth pitch or something. So like they've got a lot of guys who are interesting, but like you can't build a bullpen out of only guys who are interesting. You got to have a couple like linchpins, some, you know, pillars to build around. And those aren't there right now. And I didn't expect them to sign Kenley Jansen or anything, but I do think they need two more relievers that are, you know, maybe you get a guy who had a 4.8 ERA last year, but the year before was really, really good, or some sort of thing like that. Caleb Ort just got DFA'd by the Astros. Like his ERA was low the year before. His rates weren't great, but like someone like that, where, you know, they've had a down year and you're looking for them to kind of upswing again. I don't have names because there's just so many of them, and, you know, yes, reliever performance is as volatile as it is. But I think they still need two more guys. And even then, I won't feel really great about drafting anybody out of this bullpen until I know more about, one, how the team views them, and then, two, how Derek Shelton operates. Because he had David Bednar in Pittsburgh. He doesn't have a David Bednar here. And so I'd like to see what he does with a bullpen that's built this way, as opposed to having, you know, one really good guy at the back end.
That makes a ton of sense. I've been kind of avoiding it during drafts as well, as I don't know what to do with what's going on.
They don't in real life either. That's how, I mean, right now, Resource has Topa, Funderburk, Sands, Orr's, Pearson Ohl, Travis Adams, Connor Prelip, and John Klein. Prelip and Klein have never pitched in the major leagues. Klein's Minnesotan, so he's taken over the Louis Varland honorary Minnesotan in the bullpen role. But you could easily add three relievers to this and still only have a league average bullpen, which league average bullpen behind this rotation in this division, you could still be okay, but yep, you got to do something.
Agreed. Let's talk prospects real quick. You mentioned the loaded outfield that is sitting available for Minnesota. We got, everyone's talking about Walker Jenkins, but you also have Emmanuel Rodriguez. You have many, many options here. What are we looking at? It doesn't have to be those guys, but those are the main culprits. Anybody that might have an impact this season that we should be keeping an eye on?
Well, if we're talking about who we haven't talked about yet and who could help in the major league level. You know, we talked about Brooks Lee at short, and like, it's not that exciting. I think as a second baseman, if he hits his marks, you could see a Jason Kipnis type player, right? Like, that's not crazy. You know, decent average, decent power, whatever. For that to happen, though, Kalen Culpepper would have to come up and take over at short. I think the way that they've moved him, the way they've felt about him since they've drafted, I think he could be on the short track. He's looked good at every stop so far. He's been as advertised coming out of college. That's the guy I'm watching. Obviously, Walker Jenkins and Manny Rodriguez are going to be at the top of the list. But if you're in a league where guys are taking minor leaguers as like future chips, the cost that those guys are going to cost versus Culpepper, for the likelihood that they help you in the major leagues this year, I think Culpepper is a much better bet. I just think based on where the Twins are soft versus where they're a little more, you know, like the outfield, you've got Martin, Larnick, Buxton, Wallner, Outman.
It's crowded.
And it's not crowded because these guys are all world beaters, but it's still guys.
They're just holding roster spots. They're just there.
I mean, James Outman had a really great year 3 years ago. You know, yeah, how long do you hang on to him rather than Walker Jenkins? I don't know the answer to that, but I also know that Orlando Arcia is not going to hold away Kalen Culpepper. If Culpepper comes up to St. Paul and hits, you know, 315 over 30 games, they'll be like, get him over here. You're already next door. Just get him on over here. And so Culpepper is the guy I'm watching. There's nobody on the pitching side. Everyone's so far away with Charlie Soto and Deason Hill. Andrew Morris to me isn't that exciting. He might be a nice reliever / back end starter. I'm banging the drum for Culpepper and Gabriel Gonzalez as the guys where the price is going to be low enough that keep an eye on them and they will help you more than a Jenkins or Rodriguez, who may be very, very good, but they're going to cost you a pretty penny, whether it's in waiver cash, draft equity, whatever. If you want to pay the name brand price, go get those guys. I think they're going to be fine. But you know, if you're in the deep back end of a draft and trying to find some sneaky value, that to me is where it's at.
Love it. Love it. Last question I have for you. What are your thoughts / expectations on 2026 for the Minnesota Twins?
I think right now they're about a 500 team, maybe plus or minus.
It wins the AL Central a lot.
Yeah, it puts you in the mix. Yeah, I am not impressed by anybody in the AL Central whatsoever. The Royals are fine. The Tigers are fine. The Guardians are fine. You know, like there's no reason for the Twins to say, you know what, we traded half our team at the deadline and we need to keep selling off. They can compete in this AL Central and AL right now. Compete doesn't make them the favorites, doesn't make them anything other than competing. That is more than what we could say in the second half last year. I think it's, you know, bring along another couple relievers, maybe find another bat. I don't know where, but this team should still be considered a team that can make some noise.
Yep. Love it. Love it. I look forward to it. I enjoy watching the Twins. Always have some fantasy relevant folks out there and hoping for some bounce backs along the way. And at worst, the pitching staff is absolutely loaded. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you. You got your new podcast coming up, all that good stuff. Yep.
So look for the Brandon Warren Baseball Show. We have it set up on anywhere you get your podcasts. We'll be dropping the first episode here pretty soon, working on finding some guests. So if you're a baseball type out there, major leaguer, former major leaguer, always looking for guests. My calling card is I think I can have a good episode with just about anybody based on my research capabilities. So if you want to check that out or access twins.substack.com where everything goes there. So, hopefully people check it out and enjoy it.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining me. Good catching up again, talking some Twins baseball, and yes, Hopefully things will start warming up for you soon enough. If not, spring training is right around the corner. So I appreciate it, man.
Be good.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 806, your 2026 Minnesota Twins preview. Catch y'all next time.